Welcome to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly. News, sports, and conversations that are important to Jackson County. This is the AM Jackson Podcast.
Local Jackson news now from the WKHM.com News Center.
Good morning. 5 minutes after the top of the hour, reporting with WKHM News. I'm Mark Daly. As the investigation continues into Sunday morning's fatal house fire on South Gorham Street, the Jackson Fire Department says it has received a high volume of public inquiries, but has no new information to release at this time. Officials say a press release will be issued once the investigation is complete. The fire claimed the lives of two toddlers and sent two adults to the hospital. Michigan State Police remain in charge of determining the cause. In the meantime, community support has been growing for the family affected by the tragedy. A GoFundMe has been created to help cover funeral expenses and mounting medical bills. As of today, nearly $36,000 has been raised. Those wishing to help can find the GoFundMe link online. We have a link available at WKHM.com. Donations and messages of support continue to come in from across the Jackson area. Deputies responding to a suspicious situation Sunday on East Michigan Avenue discovered a person with a fatal gunshot wound in a parking lot. The call was handled by county deputies while Blackman Township Department of Public Safety units were tied up on other incidents. Once Blackman officials arrived, they assumed control of the scene and the investigation. Early indications suggest the incident may have been a suicide. The investigation remains ongoing and no further details have been released at this time. Judge is taking additional time to decide whether a 13-year-old boy accused of fatally shooting another teenager will be sent to circuit court. Following the continuation of the juvenile's preliminary examination Monday, the judge said she needs to review earlier testimony before ruling on whether enough evidence exists to bind the case over. A written decision is expected, though no timeline has been announced. The boy is accused of shooting 16-year-old Isaiah Ramos Bostwick during a sleepover at a Harris Street home in January. The victim died from a single gunshot wound to the face, according to autopsy testimony. The 13-year-old, who cannot be charged as an adult due to his age, faces first-degree murder and firearm-related charges in juvenile court. Police testimony indicated multiple teens were present, and the investigation into the source of the handgun remains ongoing. The juvenile remains held at the Jackson County Youth Center without bond. A newly installed body scanner at the Jackson County Jail is already proving effective. Within its first 2 days of operation, deputies intercepted narcotics from two individuals during intake procedures. The Tech 84 body scanner went to full service Saturday at the Wesley Street Jail. By Sunday, deputies discovered methamphetamine and cocaine in two separate incidents. In the first case, a scan of a newly arrested woman detected a concealed foreign object. A search led to the seizure of nearly 2 grams of methamphetamine and more than 2 grams of cocaine. Later the same day, deputies identified another individual suspected of possession contraband. Scan revealed drugs taped to the person's inner thigh, resulting in the recovery of more than 3 grams of methamphetamine and cocaine. Formal charges are being sought for illegal introduction of controlled substances into a correctional facility. The scanner was funded in part through a jail security modernization grant. Facing strong opposition to a proposed second utility-scale solar farm, the Fayette Township Board has hired a Portage-based law firm to provide legal guidance on zoning and projected related issues. The board approved retaining Buckham, Thal, Sieber, Kaufman, and Koch's during its Monday meeting at Jonesville High School, a larger venue used due to continued high public turnout. All three sitting board members voted in favor. Supervisor Nate Baker recused himself because family-owned farmland is included in the proposed project area. The proposed Heartwood Solar 2 project would span roughly 1,350 acres east of Jonesville and generate up to 140 megawatts. Chicago-based Ranger Power is behind the project, which would follow Heartwood Solar 1, already under construction nearby. Roughly 60 residents attended the meeting, continuing to raise concerns about environmental impact, property values, and transparency. The Township Planning Commission has not yet reviewed the project and is scheduled to meet this evening. A new study shows the potential economic boost Michigan communities could gain by building data centers. Michigan News Network's Jeremy Jenkins has this story.
The Anderson Economic Group study shows data centers ranging in size could bring hundreds to thousands of jobs and millions every year in economic impact. Tyler Teal, Anderson Economic Group's vice president and director of economic analysis, says Michigan could be a leader when it comes to data centers.
It really is a unique opportunity for Michigan to have additional economic activity, additional economic development that we need to combat our declining demographics here and to generate new economic activity and attract and retain families here, young people, our talent pipeline through our universities.
The study was meant to benefit developers, local municipalities, and the public by providing insight into the money that could follow if data centers are built. They said transparency from developers is the best way to appeal themselves to a community.
Jeremy Jenkins for the Michigan News Network.
President Donald Trump is threatening to interfere with the planned opening of the Gordie Howe International Bridge. The president said he will not allow the bridge connecting Detroit and Windsor to open until the U.S. is fully compensated for everything. The message went on to say that negotiations will begin immediately. Governor Gretchen Whitmer's office released a statement saying the bridge is all about jobs, saying Canada financed the construction of the bridge and will be operated under a joint ownership agreement between Michigan and Canada. The bridge, which broke ground in 2018, is expected to open at some point this year. Michigan's top officials now reacting to the president's threats to keep the Gordie Howe from opening. U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin called the bridge an incredibly important infrastructure project for Michigan, saying that keeping it closed would be awful for our state's economy. She said she'll do her best to get the project back on track. We'll find out this afternoon if the four people connected to the Oxford Center explosion that killed a five-year-old boy will stand trial on second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter charges. A Troy District Court judge will issue her decision during a hearing. The founder and CEO of the Oxford Center, Tamala Peterson, along with Gary Markin and Jeffrey Mosteller, are charged with second-degree murder and involuntary manslaughter. Aletta Moffitt is charged with involuntary manslaughter in the death of Thomas Cooper, who died more than a year ago when a hyperbaric chamber he was in exploded. It's going to be an interesting report as Ford reveals its 2025 earnings this afternoon. Auto Beat reporter Jeff Gilbert.
The elephant in the room will be the $19.5 billion charge Ford is putting into the fourth quarter, which is likely to mean a big loss on paper. Pre-tax, we may see profits for the year around $7 billion. Ford's also dealing with the aftermath of an aluminum supplier fire and ongoing warranty issues. Profit sharing, meanwhile, is based on pre-tax earnings in North America, where Ford did post some pretty strong sales numbers. Jeff Gilbert, the Michigan News Network.
There are upcoming intermittent single-lane closures on southbound U.S. 127 scheduled for today. The Michigan Department of Transportation will have single-lane intermittent closures of southbound U.S. 127 between M50 and Parnell Road on ramp to southbound U.S. 127 to remove a sign cantilever on February 10th near Jackson. A cantilever is a structural element that is firmly attached to a fixed structure at one end and is unsupported on the other end. The work is scheduled to begin at 9 a.m. and has an estimated end time of 3 o'clock this afternoon. MDOT says the Parnell Road on-ramp to southbound U.S. 127 will also have intermittent closures, with the closure ensuring the safety of workers and motorists. City of Jackson could be entering a three-year partnership with the RX Kids program. The RX Kids is a cash prescription program for pregnant moms. The program provides all pregnant moms in the program's community with $1,500, no strings attached, cash during pregnancy, and up to $500 a month during the baby's first months of life. Eligibility for the RX Kids program is determined by where you live. A memo and presentation sent to Jackson City Council ahead of their meeting this evening details the city and Blackman Township as priority communities for the program's services. presentation breaks down the annual match needed to leverage around $2.5 million in state grant funds, with a three-year partnership being proposed. In year one, the match needed from the city and Blackman Township would be around $74,000, and the match for years two and three would be around $119,000. City Council is scheduled to vote on whether or not to approve the contributions and partnership at Tuesday's City Council meeting. We just mentioned RX Kids possibly coming to Jackson. RX Kids Healthcare Program is expanding to the entire Upper Peninsula starting next month. Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced Monday that the program, which has been in five counties in the UP, will grow to all 15 counties in the region in March. RX Kids, again, is a prenatal and infant cash prescription program that provides $1,500 to mothers during pregnancy, $500 a month for babies between 6 and 12 months after they are born. In making the announcement, the governor said every kid deserves a bright future. The program is led by Michigan State University. A West Michigan man who was reported missing on Sunday has been found dead. Michigan State Police say 59-year-old Gregory Bisboy's death is consistent with exposure to the elements, and there does not appear to be any foul play involved. He had left his house southwest of Mount Pleasant on Saturday with no shoes, wallet, or cell phone. The investigation is ongoing. State police say Brisboy's body was found near his home. Almost half of Michigan drivers that need glasses say they're on the roads without a recent eye check. A recent survey from LensPricer.com says that over 2 million Michiganders are part of the blur risk population. Officials say the winter's shorter days and longer commutes mean clear vision is more important. Many of the drivers say they don't go to the eye doctor because of the cost, the inconvenience of going, or that their vision is good enough. Things are looking up for hiring this year. That's according to a survey from Robert Half, according to the company's Sharon Edlinger.
What we found from employers is hiring optimism is high. We are rebounding in the first half of 2026. 60% plan to add permanent staff just in the first two quarters of 2026.
Edlinger says just 6% say they have the talent they need to complete high priority projects. She says fields in demand include finance, accounting, customer support, healthcare, human resources, and tech. Congressman John James is presenting what he calls a parent's bill of rights. We get this story from Michigan News Network's Kyle Kimball.
The father of three and gubernatorial candidate says it's his plan to end government overreach where Michigan families are concerned. James' plan has five tenets. One, that parents direct their children's education. Two, that parents control their children's health care. Three, that safeguards are in place to prevent tech companies from exploiting children. Four, that there be measures to preserve family integrity. And five, that the state would enforce these rights. Most polls to date indicate James to be the front runner for his party's nomination to be Michigan's next governor.
Kyle Kimball, the Michigan News Network.
New legislation focused on housing affordability has been introduced in Washington, D.C. by Michigan Congressman Tom Barrett. The Republican says his proposal will help first-time buyers make a loan payment, boost new home construction, and protect grieving spouses from unfair taxes.
Right now, too many families can't afford a home. They're delaying starting a family or raising kids or all of the other things that they would love to be able to do because they simply can't afford a home. We have a number of reasons for why that's happening, and these bills are going to cut through that and help get more families into homes. These proposals will help first-time homebuyers make a down payment, boost new home construction, protect grieving spouses from unfair tax burdens, and ensure that homes go to families who need them, not just big investment corporations looking to profit. It's time we build a housing market that focuses on putting families in homes rather than pricing them out.
One of the bills is the Time to Heal Act, which would eliminate the requirement that widowed spouses must sell their home within 2 years of their spouse's death to receive the $500,000 exemption on capital gains taxes for married couples rather than the $250,000 exemption for single sellers. We're seeing a disturbing trend. More young people are developing heart problems. Michigan News Network's Beth Fisher.
The Centers for Disease Control says there's been a 66% increase in heart attacks in those 18 to 44 since 2019. Executive VP and Chief Medical Officer for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, Dr. James Grant, says the reason we're seeing it, obesity, diabetes, and stress in younger and younger people.
They need to start watching their weight. They need to start watching their diet. They need to start watching your cholesterol. Be sure, I mean, sometimes when you're, 30-some-odd years old or 20-some-odd years old, you think you're invincible. It's not true. You can, any age, you can get disease. See your primary care physician. Don't smoke. Eat right. Manage your blood sugar. Control your blood pressure. Minimize the stress.
Grant says this trend is shocking and not something we were seeing 20 years ago. Beth Fisher, Michigan News Network.
Valentine's Day could be a pricey one for you and your significant other this year. Tony Ortiz explains.
That's according to officials at Investors Observers, who took a hard look at the average total cost for the most popular gifts that are given out on Valentine's Day. A box of chocolates, a dozen roses, dinner for two, and diamond earrings. The study reveals that the total cost of those gifts has risen from $512 in 2016 to $775 this year. The one that's gone up the most? Chocolates. They've risen 236% over the last 10 years, making the average price of a box of chocolates close to $50 this year. Now, if you want to have a less expensive Valentine's that will still get your message of love across, try a bottle of wine, up only 8% from 2016, a greeting card, which jumped just 31%, a stuffed animal, which is up only 10% over the last 10 years, and of course, a little Barry White on the stereo. I'm Tony Ortiz for the Michigan News Network.
It's Tuesday, and it's the 10th day of February. Far out, man. And today we celebrate National Cream Cheese Brownie Day. Cream cheese, there's a thing? Sounds fabulous. National Flannel Day, National Home Warranty Day, Teddy Day, and National Umbrella Day. It was on this date in 1933, the first singing telegram was introduced by the Postal Telegram Company in New York. It was on this date in 1949. Arthur Miller, his play Death of a Salesman, opened at Broadway's Marosco Theater. It's on this date in 1981. 8 people were killed and 198 injured when a fire broke out at the Las Vegas Hilton Hotel and Casino. On this date in 1990, South African President F.W. de Klerk announced activist Nelson Mandela would be released the next day after 27 years in captivity. On this date in 1998, Monica Lewinsky's mother, Marsha Lewis, testified before the grand jury investigating her daughter's alleged affair with President Bill Clinton. On this date in 1998, a federal judge ordered American Airlines pilots to end a sick out that had grounded 2,500 flights, stranded 200,000 travelers, and left businesses scrambling for cargo carriers. On this date in 2001, former New York City Mayor Abraham Beam died at the age of 94. On this date in 2005, North Korea publicly announced for the first time it had nuclear arms. It was on this date in 2013, Argo won Best Film at the 66th British Academy Film Awards in London. It was on this date in 2014, actress Shirley Temple died at the age of 85. It was on this date in 2015, Jon Stewart announced he would be leaving his TV program, The Daily Show, before the end of the year. Birthdays today include Chloe Grace Moretz, 29, actress, Kick-Ass, Dark Shadows, The Fifth Wave. Mackenzie Vega from The Good Wife is 32 today. Emma Roberts is 35, actress today. Stephanie Beatriz is 45, actress from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Uzo Aduba, 45, actress from Orange is the New Black. Elizabeth Banks, 52, actress from The Hunger Games, Pitch Perfect. Laura Dern from Jurassic Park, Star Trek, Star Wars. Oh, boy. I just hacked off people. I confused the two franchises. Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Laura Dern is 59 today. George Stephanopoulos from Good Morning America. He is 65. And Robert Wagner is 96 today. Other birthdays include Nick Fuentes. He's a singer. He's 43 today. Ben Romans is 45 keyboardist from the Click 5, and Eric Dill, also from the Click 5, 45 today. Don Omar, reggae singer, is 48 today. Country singer Lionel Cartwright turned 66 today.
I'd go through the stations till I found a game. I knew how they played by the sounds of their names. The sluggers hit homers, those pitchers threw smoke. And I watched it all on my radio. At the crack of the bat, I knew how far it'd go. And I watched it all on my radio.
For more local stories, breaking news, and interviews with Jackson's newsmakers, visit us online at WKHM.com. I'm Mark Daly.
When the ball game was over, the wrap-up complete, I'd search through the static till I found a beat. The Beatles and Creedence, the Stones and the Birds. You should have seen all the groups that I heard.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast. Right now, let's jump into your sports on AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM. And oh, it was a day. It was a day for the Detroit Basketball Pistons. What's actually being overshadowed, the win is being overshadowed by the malice not at the palace last night. Let's get to the highlights first before we jump into it. Let's jump ahead to the second. Cade Cunningham feeds Beef Stew, who played partial game, little foreshadowing for you, 37-42 as the Pistons are playing catch-up in the second.
Cunningham right to left, across the midcourt line. A nipple on him. Oh, what a fake move.
Oh, and nice pass.
Stew off the pass for the dunk.
Nice look.
Beautiful. 42-37. More assists now for Cade Cunningham.
The Pistons work their way back to a tie and then go ahead. Robinson scores off of this turnover in the second. It's 59-57.
James walks it across. So despite a 12-2 advantage by Charlotte in made threes, the game is tied. No, ball kicks it away. A turnover, the run out, and the lead back, Duncan Robinson.
It's all about defense.
59-57, the Pistons are up by two.
A lob to Duren in the third makes it 68-62. And we're just a mere seconds away from a brawl.
And there's a lob, Harris to Duren, able to get it to go right at the rim.
Points in the paint.
That's where the Pistons are
feasting.
Best in the league, 68-62.
And then Duren gets hammered. Words are exchanged, and then the fisticuffs come out in the third.
And Diabate is swinging.
He's gone.
Now, Duren did a really good job of stepping back, and boy, Diabate is, he's facing suspension here. There is no question about it. Diabate is done. And now Bridges throws a punch.
Now Stu
now
just came.
Now,
oh, man, that's a Donnybrook. There they go.
And
it's going to be a lot of fines right
there's
now.
There's going to be fines and suspensions. I hate to see Stu get in there.
Stu's gone. Stu
will be gone. Oh.
So Diabate and Duren exchange heated words in each other's face before Duren shoved Diabate's face, and in response, Diabate charged at Duren, starting the brawl. Then, just as the scrum appeared to be dying down, Bridges went out of his way to continue things by taking a swing at Duren. That led to Pistons big man Isaiah Stewart, Beef Stew, flying off the bench and starting a scuffle with Bridges. All four players ejected from the game. Suspensions for some, if not all of them, are expected to be handed down from the league today. And with his previous fighting history and for coming off the bench, Stewart's suspension could be longer than the rest. And lost in that night, in last night's scuffle, Pistons 110-104 victory After the malice not at the palace, let's pick up with Cade getting a three in the fourth. It's 91-82.
Reed avoids a trap on the left sideline. Got Brandon Miller on him. Steps it back for a three. Oh, baby. Needed that was big time there. 91-82 Detroit on a Cunningham triple.
When we go to the fourth, Thompson steals, Robinson scores, 97-85.
Depth left covered up by Duncan Robinson, and it goes to James. Batted away by Thompson to Reed. Fastball touchdown. Pass ahead, and Duncan Robinson with the dunk.
Touchdown.
That was a nice pass.
Nice series defensively.
And another Charlotte timeout. 6:39 to go, 97-85 Detroit.
Waning moments. Cade gets a reverse layup. 104-96 in the fourth.
Cade got a step to the basket. Reverse layup, and he scored as he got by Brandon Miller.
Now that's an all-star right there.
104-96 Detroit. 2:22 to go.
And
Cade with 31 in the game.
And then the final call.
Williams to ball. Lets it fly. No good. Rebound. Cade to the Pistons. And a heck of a game.
What a game.
Knock off the Charlotte Hornets. This game had a little bit of everything.
Everything except dinner.
104. My goodness.
So, yeah, the Pistons win. We could lose a couple players for a few games, maybe longer. We'll see what the NBA decides. Elsewhere from the hardwoods of the association, Lakers lose. Oh, that's a good night. 119-110 to the Thunder. Warriors get a squeaker of a win over Grizzlies, 114-113. Trailblazers beat the 76ers, 135-118. Cavaliers getting a win over Connor Dockery's Denver Basketball Nuggets, 119-117. Timberwolves over the Hawks, 138-116. Pelicans beat the Kings, 120-94. Nets on top of doubles, 123-115. Jazz beat the Heat, 115-111. Magic over the Bucks, 118-99 yesterday. Now on to high school basketball. Let's take a look at boys basketball. Out of the Big Eight, where yesterday it was Stockbridge beating Quincy 69-61. Today you've got Quincy at Bronson, Concord at Reading, and the Valley will be at Springport. Tip times across the board, 7 o'clock. Cascades Conference basketball, full tilt tonight with Manchester at East Jackson, Center at Grass Lake, Jonesville at Hanover Horton, Addison is at Homer, Leslie at Napoleon, Columbia is at Vandercook Lake. 7 o'clock tip times across the board, with the exception of that Manchester at East Jackson, 6 o'clock. And it's looking like, the way things are shaping up in the East and the West and the Cascades, it's looking like it's going to be a Columbia versus Michigan Center, a rematch coming up in the Cascades championship game this weekend. Catholic High School League, AA Division, the semifinal tonight, Lumen Christi versus Detroit Loyola. Winner there going to advance to the Catholic High School League tournament final, which is going to be at Oakland University coming up on Saturday. So we'll be following that for you. From the I-8, Interstate 8, today you've got Northwest at Hastings. That's at 7. Marshall is at Western, 7 o'clock tip time there. And boys basketball in the white. Jackson getting an 81-39 win over Ypsilanti Community yesterday. Adrian at South Lyon tonight, 7 o'clock. Girls basketball, as we head to the Cascades, girls basketball saw BD and East Jackson getting the 40-24 win over BD yesterday. It was Leslie topping Addison 50-28. And at our broadcast game last night, Cascades powerhouses saw Grass Lake getting the win over Michigan Center last night. It was Adeline Jarko nails a three as the Warriors jump out to a 10-0 run early on.
Run the floor, Sharkey into the corner. Jarko open, fires a three, hits 10-0. Warriors. Jarko
had 22 their first meeting and made a few of those.
End of the first quarter, Vigeland gets a buzzer beater for the Warriors. It's 19-9.
Seconds left, late. Backs it out to White, jab step, gives it up. Vigeland looks up, deep triple at the buzzer, out the window, and count it.
Vigeland didn't need to call glass. It's going to count.
19-8 after that three-point make.
And here's the final call of the game. 75-41, Grass Lake wins.
75-41, our final. Grass Lake victorious, and that makes them conference champs, at least for the East. They'll have to play championship game. And I think that was still up in the air for over in the West.
And for Michigan Center, it was Maurice View. She led the Cardinals with 13 points, 4 boards. McKinley Gaddy, 8 points. So 14-3 on the season for the center, for Michigan Center Cardinals. And again, Grass Lake getting the win. So that was the championship basically for the East. For the West, which still needs to be determined, you have Columbia at 10-2, Hanover Horton at 10-2, in conference play, 13-2 overall for both of those teams. So you have a tight contest going on out of the West, and they're going to have that makeup happening tonight. So a big contest going on tonight, Columbia versus Hanover Horton, 7 o'clock. That basically, no, they play again. So they play the 10th, and then they play again on the 17th. So this is not going to be figured out anytime soon. Not going to be figured out anytime soon by any means. So we'll be keeping an eye on those two teams as they are trying to battle for the conference championship for the Cascades West. Into the White, Jackson defeated Ypsilanti Lincoln yesterday. That was a makeup from January, 58-25 for that final. And girls basketball out of the SCAA East, where Jackson Christian will be taking on Hillsdale Academy on the road at the Academy tonight, 7 o'clock, for the tip time there. Elsewhere in high school sports. Boys bowling last night. Ipsy Lincoln defeated Jackson 21-9. Jackson lost at home Monday in conference bowling. Girls bowling, Ipsy Lincoln 30, Jackson nothing. Vikings lost at Jack 60. In hockey for today, Lohman on the road. They'll be taking on Mattawan. Puck drops there at 4 o'clock. Bowling today, Skyline at Jackson. Coldwater at Northwest. And Marshall is at Western, 3 o'clock and then 3:30, all respective times in high school sports. So kind of a high school sports light. Hey, let's journey back to basketball real quick, if you don't mind. Let's take a look at the Big Ten. There was one contest in the Big Ten from yesterday. It was Indiana defeating Oregon, 92-74 for that final. Tonight in the Big Ten, just a couple contests. Nebraska plays host to Purdue. Illinois will host Wisconsin, 7 and 8, respectively, for the tip times there. And as we wrap things up, we're still at a 2-medal count for the United States. They're both gold, but we're at a 2-medal count for the United States. You've got Japan with 7 medals total, 2 gold, 2 silver, and 3 bronze. You've got Norway with 6 total, 3 gold, a silver, and 2 bronze. And Switzerland, 3-1-1 with a total of 5. So, and then Germany right there at 2-1-1. That's your 1 through 5 right now in the medal standings. So just a quick little rundown of the Olympics, if you're following, from the last 24-hour span. In figure skating, United States won the gold medal in team figure skating, defending their 2022 title last night. So Ilya Malinin, the quad god, clinched the gold with a stellar free skate, scoring 200.03 to break a deadlock with Japan. Mixed doubles curling, the duo of Corey Dropkin and Corey Thies made history by defeating Italy 5-4 to advance to the gold medal games, where they'll face Sweden. Women's ice hockey, Team USA dominated Switzerland 5-0 to remain undefeated in group play with goals from Haley Wynn, Joy Dunn, Hannah Bilka, Alex Carpenter, and Caroline Harvey. Alpine skiing, women's combine, Breezy Johnson, Michaela Schifrin started strong in the downhill portion of the combine combine event, leading the field ahead of the slalom run. In ice dance, Madison Chalk and Evan Bates recorded a score of 89.72, placing them in strong competition for a medal behind France's Guillaume Cizerone and Lawrence Fenier Boudry. I am totally guessing on each and every one of those pronunciations. I hope you understand that. Upcoming events. The U.S. women's hockey team faces Canada today following injury concerns for Canadian star Marie-Philippe Poulin. And mixed doubles curling gold medal match is scheduled for today as well. There you go. That's a look at your sports with the little Olympic update bonus.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
Back to AM Jackson, live from the County National Bank Studio.
ABC News headlines in a little bit, courtesy of Jenkins Insurance Group, Farm Bureau Insurance Agency, insurance coverage for your home, auto, or your farm. Right now, let's head to, well, you know, I almost said, because I've been telling you all morning long, I was going to be on our newsmaker line, and boy, do we have clarity on our newsmaker line. Live in studio, County Commission Chairman Steve Shotwell. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today, Mark?
I'm well, and I appreciate you, and a day you didn't have to get up early to get up early and come in and talk with us. Thank you so much.
Yes, I did.
So, how are things downtown at Miller Shoes?
Things are wonderful at Miller Shoes. We've got spring merchandise coming in, new Brooks tennis shoes, new New Balance tennis shoes in stock, and we've also started carrying some non-metallic toed Reeboks for people that are working either at Mackey or Tack or any of the other facilities around town that are priced at $140.
Okay, so come in and check them out. Try them on and get both feet measured.
That's correct.
At Miller Shoes. Very good. Downtown Jackson. Well, it's been, it feels like we've been getting a lot of news out of the county lately. And there's a couple things that we had in our news within the last couple of days. And I want to start off with public comment at the county meetings. And Mike Overton expressed concern recently about the length of public comment and how that could impede county business. I guess your thoughts on the proposed, let's move agenda items to the first part of public comment and then other comments later on. Your thoughts on that as county commission chairman?
Well, this has been a common practice around the state and around the county with townships, cities, villages, all doing this because public comment has become quite provocative of late. And a lot of times people want to share with us their feelings and opinions on an issue that the county really has no say in. We have no, if you would, dog in the fight. We have things that we have to get done and accomplish business-wise, as we will be talking about a little later, something that got delayed for the airport that's very important and significant to Jackson. The idea behind public comment is for the citizens to tell us what they believe we should do on actionable items later in the agenda. And that's what we'd really like to focus on with the first public comment. The second public comment will be the opportunity for people to speak about any and all topics that they would like to speak about. And the Board of Commissioners assure me that they will listen attentively, and that going forward, it will be decided Tuesday night by the full Board of Commissioners on if we are going to change our public comment at all.
Okay. Or do you have an idea as to which way that's going to lean? Or what? Let me ask you this, because it's not fair for me to ask you other people's opinions. But where do you want to land on this?
To be fair, I have no feeling either way. I've got to be there from the beginning to the end.
Okay.
I typically have people not hesitate to share with me in the times in between meetings when I see them on the street or if I see them at church or if I see them at a restaurant. Sometimes my wife can be a little annoyed, but people do share, and I'm very respectful of other people's time and that maybe they can't come on a Tuesday night and share their opinion, or maybe for whatever reason they can't stay up till 11 o'clock at night and share their feelings with the Board of Commissioners. So I'm more than open to listen to all opinions on this, so I'm going to most likely go with the majority. Okay. Once we get through that process. And I believe that the county residents will have their opportunity to have their say on all issues at county meetings, just as they had in the past.
What business was impeded as a result of the last meeting where we had a lot
well,
at the county commission meeting talking about the relationship the sheriff's department had with
us? We were taking action on, and you and I talked about it just before we started here, that the time had passed on a resolution that was needed for the new school that we're attempting to do at the airport.
Right.
And that was one of the items that was furloughed to the next meeting, which is the study session Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So we will again endeavor to get as much accomplished as possible at our county commission meetings. We also need to maintain public decorum and safety at our meetings. The room can only hold so many, and we're on the fifth floor, so there's elevators and stairs involved, and there was an issue that occurred at that meeting. Inadvertently, we had an elevator that has been broken for a while and had to order special parts for it. So we only had one elevator in use that could have caused a dangerous situation if something had happened in the building safety-wise. And we did have a second freight elevator that's on that floor. But again, that's moving people through the back part of the building and not moving them through the ADA-approved pathways of the building. So, yeah, so those are the difficulties that come into play. We will continue to foster public comment, and we will continue to be as respectful of everyone as we possibly can.
With the and we carried the comments from Juan Zapata at the study session last week. So did the county take action at the study session?
Yes, we did.
Okay, so,
yes, we did.
So what's going to happen with it? Yeah, let's just kind of wrap up the airport conversation then real quick. What's going to happen there?
So we have begun the process of looking to create a technical or a repair school, if you would, at the Jackson Airport, where students would be trained, just like you're trained to work on a semi or trained to work on a car, you would be trained to work on aircraft. There is a situation in the United States as we go forward that there is not going to be enough aircraft repair people with everything that's coming down the pike. And Jackson wants to be on the front end of this because these same people who will work on passenger aircraft also will be working on drone aircraft, other items that we have right now that are currently flying at our airport, but we don't offer the mechanic service for it. So we're hoping that we can create a situation where we'll be training a number of students a year. They'll be graduating. They'll be going to work in this field. This is a highly skilled area and a highly paid area for people going forward. So it would be a great career path for young adults and other people who would like to be able to learn this craft and do it right here in Jackson.
Out of curiosity, yeah, like when my car breaks down, I call up, you know, whoever and have it towed to wherever and get it. If an aircraft needs a mechanic, it's not that simple. I mean, how does that get fixed if we don't have that at the airport?
That's correct. That's the first thing. We have to make sure that we have a mechanic at the airport, but also we need to make sure we're training the next generation to work on these aircraft. Also, and it'll be significant and important for all of Jackson County and for the industry. You know, we have over 40,000 takeoffs and landings at our airport, and if you have that many aircraft coming and going, you're going to need mechanics to fix them. I have nothing else to, if you would like your car, change your oil, rotate your tires, make sure your lifts are working correctly and everything like that. So it's an ongoing concern.
Okay. County Commission Chairman Steve Shotwell joining us here in the studio on AM Jackson. One of the things we're also reporting on this morning is the scanner out at the jail facility.
Correct.
The sheriff's scanner.
Yeah.
It's working. It's working.
It works well.
We caught some contraband.
Correct. He attempted to hide some contraband between his knees and belly button and was able to see it and stop the person and then deal with the situation. And the sheriff and the prosecutor are handling that now.
Okay.
So it's worked very, very well already once. And I think that's going to send the message out to people that you can't get away with stuff. I think this person didn't know we had the scanner. And going forward, that's going to be used quite a bit.
Well, I'm sure, you know, the word was out that, hey, we're able to get stuff through. And now that the scanner's there,
you're not able to get stuff. Yes.
You're not going to be able to get stuff through.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Correct. So, yeah, it's very good. It's very good use of technology.
I had Lydia in last week. We're talking animal shelter stuff, and I failed to ask her about the dog park coming to, what's it, the Vandercook Lake Park?
So when we did our five-year park study, it was one of the top priorities that was needed. We've looked at the different parks and facilities around Jackson County. Upon study, the parks director and his staff's analysis shows that to the south of the parking lot at Vandercook Lake would be probably an excellent spot for the consideration of a dog park. And we're going to put in a small animal fenced area and a large animal fenced area. And when you look at it, you'll see four areas. It's not that we have four dog parks areas. You have an area that's rested and an area that is during use. So, and that's quite common in a lot of the different dog parks that are around that are maintained for this.
Okay.
But one feature that we're going to have at this, at Vandercook Lake, because a lot of people are still are doing this right now, are utilizing the lake to cool their animals off during the summer and to train water dogs. Water dog training is a sport in Michigan. There's a lot of it done around here and an opportunity to have a shallow surface to train those dogs on for retrieval is truly very helpful. I personally have used that area that they're talking about doing to train my dogs.
Oh, okay.
You know, you can, like I said, you have a long pathway of a sandbar there. It's very nice. It's separated from the public beach, so you don't have dogs on the public beach. You don't have people being being knocked over, small children wanting to pet a dog because you're in a separate area, which it can be helpful. And that's the direction that the parks staff and now the parks board has recommended to the full board of commissioners. And I'm sure we'll hear more and more about this as we go forward.
Is that separated from the boat launch too then?
Right in between.
Right in between. Okay.
So, yeah, we're the kind of to the what would be to the right of the last big willow tree, but not as far, like I said, as the pathway is.
Okay.
So yeah, if you go on the county's website and look at the minutes for and the meeting agenda for the parks this last Wednesday, you'll see all the alternative schematics and then the one that has been selected.
So that'll be in this year then?
That's the goal.
Okay. All right. When do we expect work to start out there?
Sometime this spring.
Okay. After things thaw out.
Yeah, after the snow melts. So that means you're going to see projects at the Cascades this spring, Vandercook Lake, Maynard Mills, the inside the walls at the old prison, fairgrounds. So you're going to see activity all around Jackson County. And this is using leveraged money. All of these different monies have been used. So the advantage of that parks millage is allowing us to leverage the state of Michigan to get more dollars spent here in Jackson for Jackson residents.
Okay. You mentioned inside the prison. That's the partnership with Grow Jackson to have the farmers market.
Correct.
Inside the prison walls. And I know what Jacob was asking for and what the county had decided on, I think a couple meetings ago, didn't exactly line up, but are we able to kind of get that lined up and move forward?
Yes. That's an agreement that was signed by Grow Jackson, and I will share that it's quite an advantageous agreement for a new business. And we will work with Grow Jackson to make this as positive as we possibly can. And we'll also be working with other businesses that want to participate in this. I know Jacob is very interested in seeing this to become successful here in South Central Michigan.
Okay. We have reports in from the Sheriff's Department and from the Prosecutor's Office. I'll leave it to Chairman's discretion as to which one he wants to start with here. But we've got some positive reports from both, right?
Well, we got their year-end reports.
Year-end reports.
That's what we got.
Okay.
And the Sheriff's Department, with its enhancements of equipment to its deputies and corrections officers, has done two things. He's hired new people, corrections officers, and he introduced those to the Board of Commissioners, and also he has new sheriff's deputies that are on patrol. Okay. We've outfitted the officers with an array of new equipment for each one of them, so they're going to have that going forward. We received a five-year plan from the sheriffs at study session that rolls in everything he did in 25 and then projects out five more years on the improvements that we need to do to our correction system here on run under the sheriff's office, mm-hmm. Channer Road and Wesley Street, to make it safe, economical, and affordable for the taxpayers of Jackson County, and to do it without, at this time, seeking a millage at this time.
Okay, so how are we going to get the funds for that?
So, well, the Board of Commissioners have prioritized public safety. It is our number two primary objective on our new strategic plan. The sheriff has put together a list of items, and it's one of those things where as we find the money available or save money throughout the year, we will do different items.
Okay.
It's not going to be a big item. You're not going to see a new jail. You're not going to see this type of stuff, but you will see Sallyport improvements. You will see the idea is to look at the capital improvement of the female situation on Chandler Road and creating a facility out there for proper lockdown. All of that was presented to the Board of Commissioners, and now the Board of Commissioners are studying that, and the Administrator Controller is going to come back with different ways to pay for it.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you will see and hear about this throughout the next year or two.
Okay.
Going forward, and the plan is to implement as many of these items as we can afford to do, and to make sure that our not only are the citizens of Jackson protected and safe, but we don't have any incidents where we have a criminal able to turn around and find something wrong with our system and maybe on a technicality get out or get off or something like that. So, gotcha. So we're going to be hopefully protecting everyone involved.
Okay. Prosecutor's office, they had their year-end.
Correct.
Year-end report?
Correct. And her total number of warrants were up for the year, which is a good thing. That means that they're truly following the pathway of least resistance to make sure that the criminals are locked up and properly prosecuted. She did show us that she had four open murders and five open that are all going to trial. So a very busy murder docket for the prosecutor's office of Jackson County, but she's getting a good conviction rate on all of these also and doing a great job managing an office and working well with the Board of Commissioners on the different things that we need to do and making sure that the bad guys are put away permanently and moved on to other facilities than to be kept here.
Okay.
So, yeah, so it was a strong report. A lot of innovation and work done, different organizations around the state that she's working with. So, yeah, it turned out to be a very thorough and positive report going forward for her first year on the job.
Very good. Yeah, we touched briefly on some stuff that J.C. Dodd is doing. What's the salt situation like?
Well, we still have a little bit of salt.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, no, because we've been hearing from other communities that salt is short because of the winter
correct.
That we've had.
That's correct. But you have to remember that we pay attention and buy it.
Yes.
Off season, if you would.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure. And in the past, we've also, and I'm not this past year, but in the past, when you've had surplus salt, Jackson has gone to surrounding counties and bought up their surplus.
Okay.
And we buy that at a much, much reduced rate. So the road report was very good yesterday. The issue now is potholes and dealing with that. I know that there's been a question on Airport Road from County Farm to 94. That is going to get a complete rehab and rebuild this next season. So we'll see all of that mess get cleaned up out there this year. So that'll be good news for everyone who's utilizing that, whether it be truck traffic coming from the new industrial sites or people just utilizing it to get to 94.
Okay. Well, I know my neck of the woods. I avoid Lindsay like the plague, and I know JC Dot is aware of it because they've got orange paints around some of those potholes out there. But we've talked about this before. If somebody wants to make sure the county is aware of a pothole or a portion of the road that needs attention, they can do so by contacting JC Dot.
Correct. Correct. Okay. Or their county commissioner.
Okay.
So, yeah, most definitely.
All right.
So, yeah.
All right. What? You're mine in Liberty Township, if I remember correctly.
No, not now.
Not
no,
now.
Thanks to the former prosecutor, I'm now north. Okay. I used to be Phil Duckham's your
That's right. Phil Duckham is. That's
county
right.
Commissioner,
that's
so,
it.
Yep.
You were.
I
when
was.
I moved in there, but not
Correct.
Anymore. Okay, gotcha.
Correct.
Anything left untouched that we need to talk about?
I don't think so. I just think everybody needs to enjoy the warmer weather, and I hope everyone has a safe and a happy Valentine's Day.
All right. Very good. Steve, thank you so much for coming in on a day you could have slept in. I appreciate you. Thank you. You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
Back to AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM.
Just like that. It's a Tuesday at 9:35, and that can only mean one thing. It's time, live from the County National Bank studio, it's the County National Bank Show, and your host, Catherine Cat Walker, joining us this morning. Cat, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Wonderful. You know, usually we talk about the weather, and I love your report this morning.
It was balmy 38.
Yes. I'm like, anything above freezing, the sun shining?
You know, we talk about 38 degrees, say, oh, I don't know, October, and it'll totally stink. But you talk about 38 degrees in February, you know, that's the closest thing you're going to get.
Get the t-shirts and shorts out.
It's the closest thing you're going to see to us doing cartwheels.
I know.
You know? Yeah. So,
very much so.
Right.
You know what? Here's what I was going to say. It's the second week in a row that you need a bigger studio for all my guests.
I was going to say, you know, I had a conversation with Dennis about taking out a commercial loan, and I don't think he was having it.
No, I didn't get a phone call yet. So we'll see. I think we need a bigger studio for you.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible because we've got a full studio today. What's going on?
We do. So we are actually here. I have Jeff Tate, who's another commercial lender with County National Bank, and brought in Corey from the city and Sean from Norfolk for the 100 homes.
All right. Very good. So So we're talking 100 homes project here.
We're talking 100 homes. I mean, everybody in Jackson who's been driving around, seeing things, you see the lots that have been cleared and then the homes going up, the new homes being built. And it's just great to see that growth in Jackson and developing up for the homes for everyone.
Yeah, it's awesome. We're bringing people back into Jackson, living in Jackson. And so it's I don't know. I guess you would say it's good news all the way around, right?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Good
all
news
right.
all the
good.
Way around.
All right. So where are we starting at, gentlemen? How are we hopping in here? Tell us about, I guess, well, Corey, let's start with you. Because, I mean, is it fair to characterize this as 100 homes kind of being your baby here?
I mean, I suppose, right? I've been working on this project with Shane Laporte, head of community development, now for about almost 3 years since we started building this project, right? And you know, it kind of started out of COVID, right? The city received some funds from the American Rescue Plan Act. I know, you know, COVID is pretty awful, but something that was really fortunate is that there was a lot of federal funding that came down from that. And I think the city's done a really great job leveraging those funds. You know, when Shane and I started talking, we said, what does the city need more than anything? And of course, the word housing came to mind right away. I think, you know, the housing crisis is real. It's real nationwide. And when you look around Jackson, you look around the city, you see a lot of neighborhoods with broken teeth, right? A lot of blank lots from decades of demoing blight, getting bad houses out of the way. And so for us, it was kind of this light bulb moment, like, wait a minute, we've got some funds to use. We've got some lots that need development. We've got a housing crisis. How can we help Jackson families get a leg up, right? And so what was born was this down payment assistance program called the 100 Homes Program.
Mm-hmm. Right. And tell me about the partnership with Norfolk. How was that like a chocolate and peanut butter kind of fit?
Right. So I love doing remodel projects at home. I love building a bathroom. I love finishing a basement. I love maybe putting a deck on the back of my house. I'm a handy guy. But what I cannot do, I can't build a house. One, you don't want to live in it. If I build it, yeah, my bathrooms look really great, but otherwise that's kind of my limit. So the city can't build anything, right? Mm. We can't go swing hammers. We can't bring in excavators. We need a building partner. And we need a strong building partner that gets it, right? We've got builders working in Jackson, and they are just amazing. But something that's different about Norfolk is their recognition of community service. They are this amazing group of people that not only want to build homes, but they want to do it the right way. And they recognize right out of the box that the city needed a strong partner that wasn't, you know, the Norfolk isn't just looking to make a buck. Now, obviously, it's a business. They've got to make money. And we want that for them. But there's this next level of community commitment that you just don't see every day. And so when we put everything together, I think Norfolk has been just about the best partner for this program.
All right. Yeah, grab the mic. Bring it up nice and close. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. It's been a great project for Norfolk Homes. We've been building in the Jackson area since probably early 2000. So I'm primarily out in the Summit Township area. And then so this was a great opportunity for us to kind of expand our palette a little bit and get into the infill projects. And when we first started having talks with the city, it kind of really hit home a little bit, being born and raised here in Jackson, still live right down the street here. So it was an easy project to kind of get involved with. We spent a lot of time working with our trade partners to be able to get the pricing down, to hit a price point that the city kind of put out there. When they first said, you know, hey, you've got to hit $175,000 price point, we kind of looked at each other at the office, said, you know, there's no way possible we could do that. You know, and we went back to them and said, you know, really, you want this? And then they were, yeah, well, by the way, we want basements, we want air conditioning.
You make us sound so demanding.
a full appliance package, you know, the list kept going on. I kind of rolled my eyes a little bit, and I'm like, are you kidding me? But then we kind of rolled our sleeves up and went to work. We started with literally the ground up. We reached out to County National Bank, which we've been had a business relationship with them, doing a lot of our commercial lending on the construction loan side of it, and reached out to them and said, hey, guys, this is a great project for the city of Jackson. What are the chances we could cut some rates? So for our commercial, so our construction loans that we use to build the houses before we sell them to the end user. So County National stepped up to the plate. They gave us a really good interest rate. They cut their loan fees. So then we went to American Title and went to and said, hey guys, what are the chances you could cut some of your, so we just started literally from the very first line item on the spreadsheet and went down to every trade and went to them and said, you know, hey guys, if we do 100 of these, how can we do it? And we'll limit the options that are available. We'll try to make it as simple as possible for you. And lo and behold, by the time we got towards the end, I'm like, you know, hey, there's a light at the end of the tunnel here. I think we can make this work. So we, you know, it took a lot of work and everything. There's, you know, we cover some overheads on it. As Corey said, you know, we try to make a profit, but we cover a lot of overheads. That's about where we get with that. And it's a great project for Jackson. We're very proud to be a part of it.
So what I'm hearing is it kind of came down to, and this is a recurring theme with this show, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kat, but this, what it came down to, really, to make this work was relationships, using the local lender, using local businesses, and leveraging the relationships like you had, like with the title company, to kind of get this done and get it off the ground. It's about relationships.
Yeah, and I think that's key. I think, Sean, you said it best, right? It's not just a partnership with the city of Norfolk, but it's a partnership with County National Bank and other lenders in town. It's a partnership with the title company. It's a partnership with trades. It's a partnership with every different part of the home buying process. And I think that's what makes it unique here in the city. Lots of other communities will use government funds or use government assistance to build homes, right? Mm-hmm. And then they'll maybe solve one or two pieces of that puzzle. What the city of Norfolk have done together is we've taken every part of the home construction and home buying process, start to finish. And that's a dozen steps, give or take. We've built the program around all of them. And so it makes it a really seamless process for Norfolk, we hope. Makes it a really easy process for the buyers. And that's the goal, right? Easy process for our lenders. We want everybody to get to come into this and remove the stress from the home buying experience.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just a tiny structure on a slab. I mean, like the demands that you went through. It's on a basement. It's got all this stuff. How difficult was it, Sean, to come up with? You talked about, you know, getting to that point, but when you actually are there, and you had to come up with the structure, you had to come up with all that stuff to kind of fit within this price point. I mean, how difficult was that?
It was. We kind of literally looked at a lot of our housing stock plans that we had, and we kind of really tore them up and threw them away and started from scratch. So the homes are 22 foot wide by 28 foot. So we literally tried to, what is the most economical way we can build this house and, you know, do it in a way that still fits what today's buyers are looking for. Big open floor plans. Mm-hmm. So the first floor of the two, we build a two-story and a ranch home. The two-story is probably the most popular one. But when you walk in that house, it's a big open floor plan with a large island in there, big windows. So we try to give everything that goes into our higher-end homes, but just in a 1,236 square foot.
Well, you're talking about the lots in the city, too, where you can build up at a two, because I'm sure you're probably having difficulty with the setbacks on a ranch, I would imagine.
Yeah, the setbacks get a little difficult sometimes. One of the great things working with the city is, with these being infill lots, you get a little bit more flexibility in where the setbacks are. When we build a new subdivision, the setbacks are, you know, pretty standard. They're 35 foot off the front property line, 10 foot off the sides. With the city, when we're doing infill, we pretty much just match what the existing houses on the both sides of them do. So some of them might be 15 foot off the front setbacks. So it gives, we have a little bit flexibility, but the guys in the field, they're the ones that are the ones that kind of really have to deal with the headaches and the problems of, hey, we only got 10 feet on both sides in this house, and there's a structure there, and what do we do with all the dirt, the spoils, that? So I get the easy job and sit in the office and, you know, sketch the stuff up and put it together. But our field guys are the ones that out in the field that deal with all the kind of the headaches and the problems.
Well, and that's kind of another thing, too, is you kind of have to make it fit within the neighborhood, too. I mean, obviously, you're not a neighborhood where every home looks like, you know, you got this home that looks like this home that looks like this home. But still, your neighborhood kind of has to flow a little bit, right?
Right. And that, again, is where I'll go back to the working with the city. And Corey will send over, hey, Sean, they picked out this lot here. Can you go take a look at it? So we'll go take a look at it. Sometimes if there's two lots next to each other, one might be a smaller lot, and we'll reach back out to them and say, hey, you've got to combine the two lots to make this work. Yeah. So it's a collaboration between, you know, us and the city that is very unique to be able to have those decisions made and made quickly. We've been trying to do this in other municipalities, and it wasn't until we were halfway through the project where I really was able to look back and see how fortunate we were to have the city as a partner on this, to have the zoning, the assessing, the DPW, the building permitting, all under one hat. It's kind of odd in a lot of areas that has everything under one roof. So it's made things extremely simple for us to work through some of the challenges on these lots.
Now, there is, Corey, there is that voice out there. There's people who are going to be saying, you know, why is the city doing this? Why is Norfolk doing it? Why? When we should just let the free market kind of dictate what happens in our city. So I guess if you could address that for us.
Sure. And you know, we could let the free market dictate it. And to some, you know, to some degree, I think there's a lot of strength there. But if we look around our neighborhoods and we look at the housing that is needed for so many families, right now the free market's not getting it done, right? Inflation is going up. Wages are not matching that. We've got people who cannot scrape enough to save for that down payment that you've got to have. We've got empty lots. We've got neighbors that literally have house, lot, house, lot, house, lot. That's not great for a neighborhood. That's not neighborhood growth and development. That's not what we want here in the city. And so for those people that say, why do we need this? My answer is, how do we not need this? This is an absolute must. And what we find is, when we put a new house in a neighborhood, we've given a family a place to call home. We've given them a backyard for their dog. We've given them a front porch to sit on. We've given a place for those kids to grow up. We've given stability, right? If you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, housing is number one on the list. It's number one. If we take care of that one basic need, everything else gets to flow from there. So on the one side, we've got families that now have a beautiful place to call home. And then on the other side, you look up and down that block and you see a different mindset. You see different pride of ownership in the lady that lives next door that now maybe cleans up that front porch, or the guy across the street that maybe mows the grass a little more often and puts some flower pots out. That, and we see that every day, right? So you've got this transformation block by block. And for some of our neighborhoods most in need, right, they've seen disinvestment over the last many, many decades. They've seen kind of the development pass them by. This is a chance for everybody to get in the game. Mm-hmm. This is a chance for the city to do right by the citizens that live here and also the citizens that don't. You know, I had somebody say to me once, why do we want to bring new people to Jackson? And I kind of looked at him funny and said, oh, so you don't want to increase the population? Well, no, I didn't say that. Well, you don't want to be, you know, welcoming and inclusive and bring lots of diversity here? I didn't say that. Oh, okay, great, because I didn't either. This is an amazing chance to build back Jackson one neighborhood at a time. And I think it's probably the most rewarding work I've ever done. And to get to do it with a great partner like Norfolk, it's a joy to get up every day and see that progress in our neighborhoods.
We were talking about earlier about the relationships and how you had the conversations with County National Bank. Let's bring County National Bank in the commercial side of this thing. So how much flexibility was there to make this happen compared to other types of commercial loans or commercial engagements you had to take part in?
No, that's a great question. And it's a cool relationship with Norfolk because they have done a lot with the bank. And this was a project they brought to us. And you could see the community impact immediately. You could see what was going to happen at the completion of this project. And for me, I got to tour one of the first ones about 2 years ago. And to now drive around Jackson, drive up and down the streets, and see everything that they have done and all of these new homes going in, it's really cool. And it's community banking at its finest. And so working with Sean at the Norfolk Group, it just made it really easy. And it was something was a no-brainer for County National Bank to partner with them. And
in your opinion, is this a program that would be successful if it wasn't for local people with local boots on the ground working with other local companies? I mean, if this were, you know, big box store or whatever, would this have happened?
It would be a lot harder for it to happen. Yeah. Like we've talked about today, it's cross-level partnerships. It's the city working with Norfolk, Norfolk working with us, Norfolk working with local suppliers to make it as affordable as possible while also retaining a profit in it. And so, no, I think it would be very hard if the community was not backing this from the bank to the city to all the suppliers with the home builder.
So with the 100 Homes Project, where are we right now? How many homes have been done? How many have yet to go? And I do want to touch upon the application process, too. How do people get rolling with that?
So we're about halfway there, right? Okay. We've got 32 homes that are closed and occupied. We've got another 18 or 20 that are under construction right now and five more that are set to start soon. So we're just over that halfway mark. We've got a year to go. And so I like to tell people, if you're thinking about applying, now is the time. Norfolk is getting started on some spec homes right now. We've got a year to get to that finish line, and now's the time, right? There are applications coming in every day. I had somebody email me just this morning. Do you think I'm going to get a spot? I said, if you get your stuff in, we're going to review your paperwork as fast as we can. We don't want someone to wait. If you want to get into a house and you want to get into this program, you reach out right away. We're going to make it happen.
Okay. What's the feeling like? And this is open to everybody here. What's the feeling like when you're going through Jackson, you see what was once an empty lot with overgrown grass, and now you see a family there? Tell me what that feels like.
I tell you what, it's a great feeling. And early on in the process, I was personally meeting with a lot of the buyers and so forth until we kind of worked out some bugs, and then I passed it off to one of our sales people. But I can tell you, we built probably over 3,000 homes in the last 20-some years. And to see the response from some of these buyers, I had, you know, single moms in tears that were just, you know, Sean, I've been looking for homes. I never could afford it. I can't believe this is happening. And it just really took on a whole different light of, you know, what I do for a business and what I do there. So, you know, from that standpoint, it is kind of some of the coolest stories to be able to tell. Mm-hmm. But and then going to how it feels seeing all the new houses going up around town, you know, as I said, I grew up in this town. I rode my bike back before we had cell phones and internet and everything else. Mm-hmm. We actually got on our bikes and we rode around town until it was dark and, you know, we had to get home.
Yeah.
So to see a lot of these neighborhoods that I used to ride my bike down and see the new houses, it's kind of really neat to see that difference. And then, you know, Corey touched on a while ago on the age of the housing stock in Jackson, which kind of took me by surprise a little bit, that I believe he said the average house in Jackson is over 80 years old. So regardless of, you know, we build 100 new homes, however many families may live in that home through its lifetime, we are building 100 new homes that were built in the 2024, mm-hmm. 25 years. So from a purely housing stock standpoint, we're starting to rebuild the age of those. And then with the energy codes that are there today versus a house that was built in the 1930s, so you look at the cost of your monthly bills, how much cheaper it is to have a high-efficiency furnace, a high-efficiency water heater, low-E windows, insulation, you know, on the basement walls. And these are all things that are just code items.
Yeah.
That are different than the homes that are, you know, 80 years old.
Right. So I've been in some of those houses that are that old, you know, where you could take a Hot Wheels car and a couple of them and race them from one end of the kitchen to the other, you know. It's settling is settling and it happens, you know, it's something has to be said. Yes, that house has nice trim, but this one's going to be level, you know.
Yeah. Well, and those energy costs are key, right? If you look at an older home and you've got someone who's paying $300 or $400 a month to consumers, and then you look at a new home and their energy bills are cut in half.
Yeah.
You can't argue with those numbers.
Right.
I'd love to have an energy bill like that. I just looking at the quality, looking at the insulation, the energy efficiency, those new construction homes are just fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So what do people need to know? Can they get financed through County National Bank for the 100 homes? How's that work?
We can, yes. We have partnered with the city with our mortgage department. Mm-hmm. I know that MSHA is part of that too for down payment programs. Yeah. I think even the mortgage teams has a special account that you can start to save to help for that down payment. And again, I remember Shane coming a few years ago to speak with us, and you know, County National Bank was like, on board, let's do this. So there are different programs out there, especially through the mortgage department, that yes, get pre-qualified, go through your MSHA, get that down payment assistance, and then we can finish the mortgage for you on the tail end of the new house.
Okay. I'm running up against the clock, but what didn't we touch upon today that our listeners need to know about?
I'm just going to add one more piece, and that is the program is based around this $25,000 in down payment assistance. This is free money. You live in that house for 5 years, and that is generational wealth. It's equity that you get to walk away with. The other cool thing that I'm going to share today, and it's not quite finished yet, is that the city is preparing to launch another layer to the down payment financing. And that layer is going to be anywhere from $15,000 to $25,000 additional on top of that $25,000. And that's coming in the next month or so. So stay tuned for that. But that's going to take that $25,000 down payment and potentially make it $40,000 to $50,000 in free money for families that qualify. So if you haven't applied yet and you're thinking $25,000 seems nice, you just wait till it's $50,000, and that's coming really, really soon.
All right. Foot 11, as Greg used to say. All right. Good deal. Gentlemen, thank you so much, everybody, for being here today on the County National Bank Show. Very much appreciated.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM.
This has been the AM Jackson Podcast. Tune in live weekday mornings from 6 until 10 at News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.